that there is...
Well, my concern has always been that there's not sufficient activism prepared, so if the police do move to close down the cannabis club, folks are just kind of going to be caught with their pants down.
Yeah.
What's your sense? Are people ready to peacefully and in a very public and visual way resist this kind of abuse?
Through the cannabis club over on, Maple Street?
Yes.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, they're just a bunch of high-profile drug dealers. And as far as WAM's concerned, they're out there really trying to help people. You know, some people can't afford marijuana, and they have a medical problem, and they help them out anyway. They give them plants, and they have other people give plants to them. As far as the cannabis club, they're just glorified drug dealers. They're just legalized drug dealers, as far as I'm concerned. They have the same prices, sometimes higher than the street value, just so you can get your, you know, safe marijuana in a little bag with the thing on it. And they're just making money left and right, as far as I'm concerned.
An unpaid commercial announcement from that band about town, Just Kidding.
Just Kidding. Anybody interested in coming and seeing us? We're doing a revival tour, and we're going to be playing two nights at the What Is Art Variety Show, which is March 20th and 21st, and I believe it's all day. Probably starts around 3 o'clock or something, goes into the nighttime. So if anybody wants to come down, support, What Is Art at 2044 North Pacific, I encourage people to do that because it's one of our few outlets for our creativity that we can still have without having to go to the movie and paying for it.
Well, Skidmark, you're also a member of the Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective.
You could say that.
And what's happening? I know you recently moved into new quarters. Have you found a permanent place? Are you still looking for a place? What's the story?
We're still looking. We still need to find a place where we don't have to pay rent because we need to continually spend money on equipment, which I'm sure you've had problems with using sometimes. And we have to constantly replace CD players and all that kind of things. You know, tape decks. We need to get new loop. We just bought a new loop machine thanks to a last benefit we had with a bunch of bands that played for us. And we just barely made enough for that.
Is there a new benefit coming up for Free Radio, or is that...
Nothing in the works right now, because we've got to spend all our money on rent.
Well, is this some slumlord you're staying at?
Well, you could say that. Maybe. I mean, you could. I mean, you did say that. But,
well, I think perhaps a picket or...
We've had a little less rent for that tiny little space that we have. Then maybe we can make it as a radio station or something like that. But, you know, I mean, we're free radio. We're trying to be free radio, and it's kind of hard to do when you have to pay rent.
Now what about I know a lot of us are hoping that a phone could be put in so that there could be actual interaction with the community. Is that in the cards, or?
Well, not if it's a temporary place. It's supposed to be only temporary, from what I understood.
So if you put it into a temporary place, then it costs you to move it again, right?
Yep. Money.
That's a bummer.
Yep.
Well, thank you, Skidmark Bob. Anything you want to conclude with?
Send all donations to Santa Cruz, P.O. Box 7507, California 95061.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
And Free Radio is what you're listening to, 96.3 FM on your FM dial. And you're talking to, or listening to, I should say. I wish you were talking to me, but... I'm Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norris, and this is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, a free rights, civil rights free radio show. It goes on from 11 in the morning to 1:30 in the afternoon every Sunday, and from 6 to 8 every Thursday. And if you have stuff you want to contribute to this show, we can't help you with that call-in phone line, unfortunately, until the station finds a really more permanent place to be. But we can take your comments. We can take your public service announcements and put them on the air. Any particular comments about this show, you can direct to my HUFF phone line. HUFF is an acronym, H-U-F-F, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. For easy number to call, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Just call that line and leave whatever comments or thoughts you have about the show, stuff you might want to hear, stuff you think should be on the show but hasn't been. stuff you think that has been on the show but shouldn't be. It's up to you what you want. Again, 423-4833. And also, if you hear any numbers on the show that you can't write down quickly enough, call that same number, 423-HUFF, and leave me a message and I'll get back to you. I want to provide a tip of the hat here to Dragon's Art Dan Hopkins. Dan is the man who co-founded the City Hall Sleepers protest back in 1996 and got dozens, if not hundreds, of hours in court for his trouble. And he actually has had all those cases pretty much thrown out. But he hasn't been able to successfully pursue an appeal to overturn the sleeping ban law. Instead, of course, now we're trying to overturn it by legal means at the ballot box, rather than trying to get the judges to do it, which is, seems to be an impossible task. But Dan's been keeping his eyes open on the streets, and he left quite a lengthy call on the line last night, some articles from the paper that he thought were worth considering, and we're going to either play his tape at the next show on Thursday, or we're going to actually read directly from those articles. Actually, I have one subject he was concerned about has to do with drug testing approved for key U.S. workers. What does this have to do with homeless people and poor people? Well, these civil rights restrictions impact everybody, of course, but they hit people hardest who are without shelter, without protection, constantly in the eye of the police. This, of course, has to do with workers, and this is the article from the San Francisco Examiner. Drug testing approved for key U.S. workers, justices rule on sensitive D.C. jobs. Washington, the Supreme Court allowed Monday random drug testing of some federal employees with access to the old executive office building next door to the White House. The justices without comment let stand a ruling that said the drug tests are justified as one way to protect the president and vice president. In the drug testing case, two Office of Management and Budget employees had urged the nation's highest court to rule that administering a test without any probable cause to suspect drug use violates their privacy rights. The appeals court acted on Monday, contending that a federal appeals court ruling allowing random testing of OMB staffers, quote, massively expands the narrow exceptions recognized to the Fourth Amendment's general requirement of probable cause. That amendment, of course, bans unreasonable searches and seizures. Taken to its logical end, the appeals court's decision would permit random testing of virtually any federal employee in the Washington area, since almost any such employee may have access to buildings frequented by members of the cabinet, members of Congress, or justices of the peace whose safety are important governmental interests, the appeal said. President Ronald Reagan issued an executive order in 1986 requiring the head of each executive branch agency to establish a drug testing program for employees in sensitive jobs. Arthur Stigall and Ellen Ballas, both financial economists, already were OMB employees assigned to work in the new executive office building a few blocks from the White House when, in 1988, a drug-free workplace plan affecting them was put into place. When notified in 1996 that he had been selected for testing, Stigall immediately challenged the testing program in court. Ballas, who has not been selected for testing, joined him in the lawsuit. A federal judge ruled that the testing violated the Fourth Amendment, but the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia reversed that ruling last April, and now the Supreme Court has upheld that. So there doesn't need to be probable cause to suspect drug use for you to be tested if you are an employee in the D.C. area with access to the old executive office building. What does it have to do with us here in Santa Cruz? Well, it's the creeping unknown, or unfortunately, the creeping known. It's the reality of they're going to test you for drugs before you turn around just because they can, as Officer Clark used to put it, or Sergeant Clark, when asked why he was arresting people for sleeping and taking their blankets. Because I can. And here's a sort of a funny story. Cop victim of donut attack, Mesa, Arizona. It's dangerous out on the mean streets of this Phoenix suburb. Just ask Officer Dean Steffen. He was fired at three times late Wednesday by a transient he's never even seen before. Fortunately for the 28-year-old motorcycle cop, the fusillade was not bullets, but donuts, jelly, glazed, and plain. I was approaching this guy, and he throws something at me when I'm 25 feet away, said Steffen, who has been on the beat for 3.5 years. Then comes another and another. That was quite enough. Steffen arrested Donald Scarf, 47, for assault. I've been hit before, but this had to be the weakest attempt at assaulting me that I've ever seen, he said Thursday. It could have been worse. When Scarf was frisked, he had a cookie in his back pocket. The officer took it easy on him, though. There were no charges of concealing a deadly snack. That's funny, unless you realize that that's a misdemeanor in California, punishable by up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine, and he'll probably be convicted of it. In Arizona, it's probably worse, so... Of course, if the police officer shot this guy dead, their local Citizens Police Review Board probably would have found that's perfectly okay, as they did in the case of Happy John Dine. There's been a lot of that recently. If you've been reading the papers, police officers have been shooting people dead in different spots in the country. Not even people who have toy guns, as Happy John Dine had, but who looked like they were drawing a gun. There was actually an article in today's Sentinel on that same subject, which I don't have with me, unfortunately. Perhaps on Thursday I'll bring that one in. From San Francisco. San Francisco stores offer old carts to the homeless. Supermarkets say they renovate them. Task force called for by Rachel Gordon. Hoping to reduce costly shopping cart theft, supermarket giants Safeway and Lucky have offered to provide homeless people in San Francisco with castaway carts no longer deemed fit for use in their stores. "We are willing to repair them so they are usable," said Deborah Lambert, Safeway's corporate director of public affairs. "We're in too," said Bruce Qualls, regional real estate manager for Lucky Stores. The commitment was made Thursday during a City Hall hearing by Supervisor Amos Brown to address the problem of shopping carts on the streets of San Francisco. On a side, I actually had a word with Amos Brown about a year ago when I was at a demonstration outside the mayor's office at the Veterans Building, which is where the mayor keeps his offices in San Francisco. Supervisor Amos Brown, not to be confused with Mayor Whitewash Willie Brown, happened by, and he stopped to talk to us briefly. We were demonstrating in solidarity with the Coalition on Homelessness, which was concerned with the fact that tickets for sleeping and harassment of the homeless has increased about 2.5 times under the so-called liberal Willie Brown, up from former police chief and mayor juggernaut Frank Jordan, who was the previous mayor of San Francisco. Even though Brown came into office decrying, condemning, and lamenting this mistreatment of homeless people. And Brown stopped to talk to us, and we asked Brown if he would support some official supervisorial restriction on the mayor, because the Board of Supervisors there, like here, controls its executive, supposedly, the executive person being the mayor. He said, "Oh no, we can't do that, but we're looking into it," and so forth. And they've still been looking into it, and people are still getting busted and arrested and ticketed for sleeping in San Francisco, even though their shelter spaces are even in worse condition than Santa Cruz's, and there are many more homeless people up there on the streets. Continuing with this article about shopping carts, which you may remember here in Santa Cruz, Butchie Baker and Officer Howes went out on a Bring 'em Back Alive shopping cart expedition. You heard earlier Skidmark Bob talking about that. I haven't heard any new reports on that, so maybe Howes and Baker have been called to account, or maybe they've just found something else to do with their time. But up in San Francisco, Brown has been making this, Supervisor Brown, that is, Amos Brown, kind of, I think he's a churchman who's ran for office. As I said, I was very unimpressed with his failure to address the sleeping ban issue up there. It's a real issue, you know. If you sleep indoors, it doesn't, you know, you kind of can read about it and go, oh boy, how silly they are. But if you're outdoors, it hits you every night. Anyway, both Lucky and Safeway report that the loss and retrieval of the shopping carts in the city alone runs into hundreds of thousands of dollars each year. Details of the giveaway plan still need to be worked out, but it is expected that about 100 carts, worth about $100 apiece new, will be turned over to the homeless at the start of the program. The stores would remove their insignias and perhaps repaint the carts another color to distinguish them from store carts. The program, however, would not take care of one of the supervisor's concerns about the proliferation of shopping carts on city streets: safety. He says abandoned shopping carts wreak havoc. When left unattended, they roll into pedestrians and property. To that end, he's calling for a stepped-up effort by the Department of Public Works and grocers to collect the carts. This, of course, sounds akin to what the Palo Alto City Council did, I guess it was last year, when they made it illegal for homeless people to sit down on the street or on the side of the sidewalk along University Avenue, claiming that people might trip and fall over them. I suppose there's more credibility for believing they might do that with shopping carts, but again, it sounds like Brown is a politician babbling about something, and this is what he's babbling about. That's Amos Brown. And for the carts used as people's rolling homes, he wants the city to open neighborhood parking lots where people can leave the rolling baskets and their possessions in a secure location off the beaten path. Somewhat similar to the Coral Street open-air shelter, perhaps, that we used to have before Mike Rotkin and Scott Kennedy moved to close it down, as well as the Citizens Committee to Exploit the Homeless, which now has its Cadillac Community House project there, apparently to be managed by Karen Gillette, who was kind of keeping hands off, but is now moving in and moving up to a higher salaried position as head of both the Homeless Community Resource Center and the head of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, the executive director. All, by the way, without an open hiring process. That's the latest decision of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. Very interesting. But continuing with a story on shopping carts in San Francisco. Mayor Brown told the shopping cart lot idea later in the day, looked surprised, but said he had no opinion at this time. Supervisor Brown called for the creation of a special shopping cart task force to further define the problem and come up with solutions. Boy. The supervisor, who faces election in November, and you can see why he's doing all this talking, needs to get his name in the paper about something, by God, said he does not want to take shopping carts away from homeless people, many of whom stow everything they own in them or use them to transport cash-generating bottles and cans to recycling centers. This actually is a change of mind on Brown's part. A month ago, he was ragging on the homeless people for having these shopping carts, claiming they were thieves and so forth. We want to serve notice to the people, to the police and other city employees, that we will not tolerate any open seizing of the shopping carts from the homeless, he said. So that's actually quite a positive change on his part. Whether it means anything, whether it has to do with the kind of breakfast he ate this morning, I'm not sure. That hasn't been the policy of city officials, who have stepped up their confiscation of shopping carts from the homeless, noted Judy Appel, staff attorney for the Coalition on Homelessness. Examiner reporters have observed on several occasions in Civic Center Plaza and Golden Gate Park city workers hauling away carts, some of them full of people's belongings. We don't support people stealing carts from the market, Appel said. We would like to see other options. The Safeway and Lucky program, she said, is a good start. One speaker at the hearing, wearing a self-pinned tag on his lapel that said politically incorrect, doesn't think so. Quote, you're going to have half the homeless people in the country coming to San Francisco, he said. The nicer you are, the more people will come. Sounds like perhaps a relative of our own Mayor Rotkin. Now, council member and shadow Mayor Rotkin. Lambert and Quala said it is their observation that homeless people are not the primary culprits in the removal of their shopping carts. These are the two folks from Safeway and Lucky. Other customers, including those who live in some of the wealthier areas of the city, walk away with them to bring home their groceries and then leave them on the sidewalk, they said. Quala said a lot of effort has been put into stopping the practice, including equipping carts with a device that automatically locks a wheel when the carts travel more than 1,000 feet from the store, but people learned how to override the lock, so the project was killed. Safeway charges a 25-cent returnable deposit fee on carts, but that hasn't eliminated the problem either. Supervisor Leland Yee admonished businesses to do more. Clearly, he said, the issue around the shopping carts has more to do with the stores that possess these carts and how they monitor these carts. Of course, the real question is, when are they going to stop arresting people for sleeping outside in San Francisco? Thank you very much. And in sleeping outside here in Santa Cruz. Well, with me in the studio now is another one of my endless parade of guests. This time I have with me Beggar Becky Johnson, a familiar voice to many of you. Writer, Citizens Committee for the Homeless, Board of Directors member, community television person. What else are you?
And a pretty darn good rollerblader.
Ah, rollerblader extraordinaire. And you have a paper with you. It looks like a page ripped out of the UCSC paper, The Fish Wrap Live. I guess it's a biweekly. What do you got there?
I'm all ready to wrap up a fish with this article here. Yes, perhaps some of your listeners recall the mighty debate that took place on February 23rd between yourself, Mr. Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norse, and Councilmember Mike Rotkin.
That debate. That was the one that we promised to air on the radio but never did, right?
Yes, there have been a few too many technical problems to be able to bring that to you compounded, even today with more technical problems.
I see. This is, of course, a debate for all you folks who went up there about the sleeping ban. And Rotkin's role in the history of maintaining that law and other anti-homeless laws in Santa Cruz. At least that's my, it was my perspective on the debate.
Well, this article in the March 4th issue of Fish Wrap Live by writer Todd Druten, he doesn't seem to have been too impressed, nor does he seem to have been better informed by having gone through the experience at this debate at Kresge Town Hall, hosted by the Rascals, I might add. Yeah, the title, Banned on the Run, is kind of clever, don't you think?
That's the title of the article, Rotkin versus Norris, Banned on the Run. Yeah. Mike and Rob duke it out over the sleeping ban, it says.
Yeah, the banned are those homeless people who must duck the cops every night in order to get 40 winks or risk a ticket or arrest for the act of sleeping. But Todd Druten seems to be rather confused by why we're making such a fuss over the difference between sleeping and camping, and why sleeping and camping aren't synonymous. In fact, the beginning of the article it says that the topic was Santa Cruz's camping ban, which between the hours of 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m. prohibits people from sleeping or setting up bedding outdoors in a parked vehicle or in a building not intended for human residence. Well, actually, what he has described are the sleeping ban and the blanket ban. But the camping ban is of course, bigger.
The camping ban has to do, of course, with tents and camping paraphernalia and things of that sort. And we, of course, in our initiative, which really this debate was about, our new proposed law to eliminate the sleeping and blanket sections of the camping ban, was to eliminate, in essence, the sleeping and blanket bans and keep the camping ban. So we weren't really debating the camping ban. And I think you're right. But Rotkin kept trying to make it into a debate on the camping ban, which, of course, it isn't. It's a debate on the sleeping sections and the sleeping ban and the blanket ban.
Yeah, well, there's a reason for that. I think middle-class people think of the idea of haphazard campsites all over the place with God knows who living in them, creating litter and noise. And I mean, that's quite a negative spectacle to behold in for a public figure to be painting in people in the public's mind.
Apparently painting in our author's mind as well, Todd Druten. Yeah.
Todd didn't very much appreciate some of your comments either. For instance, he kept every time he made a comment about what you'd say. He would say that you were complaining. Rotkin would say something, but you would complain. He would complain that Rotkin didn't say much about the sleeping ban. You complained of Riot Act Rotkin being in office too long. And that there were cries of inaccuracies thrown at one another. But my impression, I was at the debate and have had a chance to review it, that you were very heavy on specifics. I mean, for the actual record for what Rotkin has done in his many, many years in power here in Santa Cruz, either as mayor or city council member, regarding how the homeless have been treated in this town, I mean... Here are some quotes from that. Rotkin was saying that Santa Cruz spends $9.1 million per year on homeless issues. But actually, at another point in the interview, he said that the city of Santa Cruz spends $1 million a year. Which is it?
Well, you know, it's an interesting article. If you pick up the March 4th issue of the Fish Wrap Live, you'll get a one-page description of the debate. And, of course, there's another description of the debate in the last week's City on a Hill. And I'd actually written a letter to the paper before the debate, which Fish Wrap Live has repeatedly refused to publish. They told me recently it was too long. hopefully I'll be able to give them an abbreviated version, but I don't think they're too interested in this issue. City on a Hill seems to be really the only media that's taken a strong interest in either the sleeping ban or in the question of the unlawful shooting of Happy John Dine. Was it unlawful? Was it manslaughter? Was it murder? What implications does it have for us here in Santa Cruz, who have the police officers who have done it, and the police force that has given us a completely bogus account of what happened, even by the Police Review Board's own standards, proceeding to proceed without any kind of discipline or correction. It's all pat on the head and on you go. Anyway, the Fisher Up Live seems to, you know, have had no interest in that issue, but City on the Hill does. And I see you've done a lot of notations on it. More comments?
Well, I noticed that they interviewed this homeless man who I've never met. Wolfman, is that familiar to you?
I've heard of Wolfman. I'm not quite sure who it is, though.
I don't think he was at the debate. But when they asked him what he thought of the law, they just say camping/sleeping ban. This Wolfman says, you need it, because if you don't have it, you'll have every derelict bozo coming to this town to camp for free.
Maybe this is Rotkin and Drag, or Rotkin Under the Full Moon.
I mean, where did they get this one homeless guy that thinks the camping ban law, as it is a good thing, and wouldn't be improved by decriminalizing sleep or decriminalizing covering up with blankets?
You know, even Carlos, who we, a former kind of veteran of Scotts Creek Bluff, a Buddhist priest who was homeless and has been homeless for many a moon, and is very critical of homeless campers who are dirty and messy with their campsites, and very much a respectful of authority, actually. He, you know, had nothing positive to say about the sleeping ban. He thought it was the wrong kind of law and, you know, a human rights violation. And it's kind of interesting. It shows the sort of, I don't know, this whole article has a sort of a cynical tone to it. Now, naturally, I'm partisan here because it's critical of me. But it doesn't really address and deal with the positions. And it tends to, you know, I guess it wants to portray an even-handed, sort of snide, distance position. But I guess, you know, that's a choice they make. The other choice they could have made was they could have chosen to say, hey, this is a real human rights violation. It's really clear. It affects UCSC students. We have a political hack, Rotkin, and you know, maybe we have this self-aggrandizing Norse, as some people consider me. I don't think that's true, but you know, the issue itself certainly is important, and it's really hard for me to see how they could take the kind of position they do, except that they aren't at all interested in the issue and don't have to worry about sleeping out themselves.
And I don't think that Todd Rutten understood the issue. He sums up the article by saying that both you and Rotkin were more interested in being right than doing right. What does he mean by that? I don't...
Oh, it's sort of a fashionable, a plague on both your houses kind of position, which tries to... obviously, it was his emotional reaction. He probably didn't like either of us much in this debate. He probably liked me less because I was more forceful and more... Indeed, I did attack Rotkin in terms of his record very specifically, and I talked a lot about that. And he didn't like that. He regarded that as descending to personal attacks. But actually, it wasn't a personal attack. It was a political attack, and it's an attack I intend to repeat every time I can, because Rotkin is the man responsible for this law, and he also likes to pretend that, you know, the law isn't what it is, and everything's okay, and it has to be torn. You have to tear aside the mask here.
Well, this is how Druten summed it up. He said, Norse's rebuttal saw him sinking into argumentative behavior, making statements like, Rotkin is not a good guy on the homeless issue, and he is lying to you.
Well, Rotkin is not a good guy on the homeless issue, and he is lying to you. So what can I say? You know, these are sort of simple statements, which I guess he...
He completely eliminated very thoughtful and very specific arguments that you supported those statements with. None of that appeared in the Fish Wrap Live, just his kind of insipid comments, summations.
Yeah, obviously we are not fans of this particular article. Banned on the Run, however, if you want to read it yourself, check out this the Fish Wrap Live. At least they referred to it. We got no coverage in the Sentinel, and the TV reporters were supposed to come down from Oakland. They actually did call, and they asked about the time of the debate, and I guess Channel 11 did a kind of a little interview with folks before the debate. Never showed up. Now it could have been because it was a rainy night. It could have been because Michael Rutkin threw tacks in front of their tires. I doubt that, actually. But in any case, Fish Wrap Live at least covered it a little bit, so we have to give them that. However, perhaps they'll print our 200-word letters pointing out some of the deficiencies. And I want to thank you, Becky Johnson, for running that by us here. Do you have any other updates before you go?
Well, if anyone's interested in attending our weekly sleeping band meetings, we're having one shortly, 1:30 p.m. at 706 Frederick Street. Get those petitions. We need to get this sleeping band repealed, and soon.
You better get rolling. I guess you got to get to 706 Frederick. So, yeah, that's in about an hour. At the 706 Frederick Street, the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban is going to be getting together to push those petitions out onto the street, and you need to be there, or we need you to be there, so you can actually do some of that work. It's got to happen soon, because we only have 2 months left to get those petitions done, actually 2.5 months, but come on down. 706 Frederick Street is where they are meeting, and that'll be starting at 1:30 today, the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. You were listening to Becky Johnson. This is, of course, your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norris. Now, I tried a few minutes ago to play a tape that kind of wound up blank, which is kind of fine howdy-do, because then when I put it on later, it wasn't blank. So we're going to try that again. This is an interview with Jennifer Wagoner, who is the editor of a homeless newspaper called Making Change in Santa Monica, California. Jennifer's important for a number of reasons. She has been editing a paper for actually 2 or 3 years. Previously, she worked on Hard Times, and she has been an activist down there fighting the Santa Monica sleeping ban, fighting for decent services for homeless people. She was involved in the Flamenco Motel takeover this fall, during which homeless people, 100 of them, took over this abandoned motel and stayed there for several weeks until they were bounced by police. I think they sawed off a metal handcuffs that she had put on, kind of a claw that she hooked herself to the motel with. She faces trespass charges. Very interesting person who's been putting her body where her mouth is on this homeless issue. And she also has been fighting a recent problem with The Big Issue. The Big Issue is the name of a newspaper in England. The Big Issue is what it calls itself. It's actually a mega multi-million-dollar corporation run by a man named John Bird. Operates in South Africa, Australia, all over England. It's a kind of a weekly magazine / newspaper sold by homeless people, which doesn't have much to do with homelessness, but uses homeless people as a distribution system. We're going to now hear what Jennifer has to say, because The Big Issue is invading the United States for the first time through Los Angeles, and thus will be directly impacting Jennifer Wagoner's paper, Making Change. She's sort of on the front lines of all this. Let's hear what she has to say about this issue.
Hello, Robert.
We're hoping we're actually going to hear something this time. Come on now, you can do it. And we have a problem with the tape again. I don't know why. It doesn't seem to work on this tape deck, so maybe we can... Kind of strange. Yeah, I can hear something happening there, but it's not really audible, which is peculiar because it operates on other machines. But let's turn instead to our backup tape, always ready to back up here. 4 or 5 days ago, I got word that there was still a tent city at Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Tent city is, of course, an encampment. And this has interested me because I know we had our own kind of tent city, Coral Street Open Air Shelter, which I've spoken of earlier on the show, roundly denounced by public officials here and even members of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless that ran it for a while. And, of course, it was torn down in 1995 in the winter, and instead we've had a vacant locked field. Instead, now we have some trailers for a halfway house slash drug program for 40 people, or actually, I guess starting with 20. That's going to cost like $600 a person, and as I've mentioned, it's a tightly controlled situation. You don't get to you don't get your own phone until you get privilege points and such. It's just sort of a totally different scene, and the reality is not that it's such a horrible, bad facility, although there are plenty of objections that have been raised to the location of the so-called community house project at this area, right next to the homeless community resource center, where it's supposed to be clean and sober, and the homeless community resource center is anything but clean and sober, but rather because the campground that it displaced has never been reconstituted anywhere else, and so you have people running around illegally facing the camping and sleeping bans, and no place to go. Well, in Fort Lauderdale, things are different. We had an interview with the city manager there, and actually someone in the city manager's office, a fellow named Horace. He can tell us what's been happening in Fort Lauderdale, mainly because of federal court action. Apparently the federal court ruled they could not close the parks unless they had other spaces for people to go to, whereas here in Santa Cruz, of course, they don't only close the parks, they close the riverbanks, they make it illegal to be downtown, lying down in any public spaces after, well, any time, day or night. So Santa Cruz actually is a much more harsh and restrictive set of laws than Fort Lauderdale. And, of course, it has no tent city or Coral Street open-air shelter or homeless campground. But to get some idea of how it was viewed, I gave a call to this city attorney's office, and then spoke to the city manager's office. And you got to understand, this man is not terribly sympathetic, but he does give us lots of interesting information. And hopefully next show I'll have some details from folks who are more closely aligned with homeless people themselves and more involved in advocacy for them. Let's hope this tape works. Let's see how it goes. Like tape problems again, folks. Wow. Arrest the people who are doing this tape thing. It's very strange. Still no good. Well, until we get a tape, let's turn instead to the papers. Let's see what we can find here. Today, I should tell you, is a special day. On the 8th of March in 1893, Laura Coffey was assassinated. Who was Laura Coffey? March 8th, 1928. She died. The most successful Universal Negro Improvement Association organizer next to its founder leader, Marcus Garvey. Her origins are steeped in mystery. She claimed to be an African princess who migrated to the U.S. in 1926 to support the UNIA programs. That's the Universal Negro Improvement Association. This was the Back to Africa movement of the early 20s. Her success and popularity earned her Garvey's ire. Denounced by Garvey, her supporters expelled her from the UNIA's. She left to set up her own African Universal Church in Miami. Her sermons were so well attended, drawing away from the local churches, that the local black clergy opposed her. She was assassinated on March 8, 1928. Her murder never solved, but it was widely suspected that UNIA supporters from Garvey's group had done it. That's Laura Coffey for all you Arcana buffs. And that happened way back in 1928. And also on this date in 1908, women marched in New York City for suffrage and against child labor. And last year, Atlanta police threatened to arrest Food Not Bombs for sharing food at Little Five Points. Arrests for sharing food. I heard from a man on the street recently that there were actually arrests in Golden Gate Park last fall at Thanksgiving of food servers for sharing a fancy meal with the homeless. Could be true. I'm not sure. It's not unbelievable if it happened, because, as you know, San Francisco has been the scene of the worst attacks on food servers, and again, heavy attacks on homeless people by mayors who claim they're liberal, like Art Agnos and our current mayor up there, Willie Brown. Well, we have a city council meeting coming up on Tuesday, in case you've forgotten. That's city council meetings at actually two of them, 3:30 in the afternoon on Tuesday, March 10th, and 7 o'clock in the evening. And city council meets at the city hall chambers, city council chambers, which are at 809 Center Street, for those of you who like addresses. And if you don't know where that is, it's pretty easy to find. It's right across from the main library and the Civic Center Auditorium. If you show up at the evening session of the City Council, although I don't have an agenda, I'm pretty sure what you'll be facing some interesting issues. There's the fluoride issue, whether the city should go along with the state policy of adding fluoride to its water. And then there's also the... seems to be the FCC breaking in here.
Hey, what's going on? Why aren't you playing any music? What kind of show is this?
It's not.
All right, beat him up. Hey, you officer, get him.
It's not really the FCC. Don't be alarmed. It's simply some amateur dramatists trying to make a name for themselves here at Free Radio Santa Cruz.
It's a spiritual path I'm on.
It's our next guest. It's David Minton Silva. I'm going to. Before, however, we present him, we're going to finish off this brief description of what's coming down the pike on Tuesday, and perhaps David will give us some more information about that, since Tuesday is the city council meeting. I'm sure he's looked over the agenda, read all the supplementary material, and knows exactly what's happening. So that actually, what will probably be on the agenda at 7 o'clock is the Pelton Street giveaway, as we call it, or...
I don't know if it'll be 7 o'clock or if because it may be, since it's agendized, actually you'll be probably at some particular, could be afternoon or...
No, it's an ordinance, so it'll be at 7 o'clock. All ordinances are in the evening.
Yeah, so it'll be after 7 o'clock, so it'll be...
At 7 o'clock means that's when the session starts, but at 7 o'clock you get a chance to come and speak. First you gag on the Pledge of Allegiance, and occasionally they have a religious figure giving some comments.
Under God.
One nation under God.
Under Celia Scott or whatever, and actually under Mike Rotkin. Rotkin is the real Führer in that council, even though Celia Scott is the mayor.
When I was in high school, they took out the under God part, and I was really trained through progressive California education that you're supposed to leave the under God part out, because that's God and His people's business, and we shouldn't be messing around with it in our Pledge of Allegiance. It's not a holy flag; it's a symbol of a
holy ridiculous, in my view. In any case, if you want to come to the Pelton Street. Debate, and I remind you, that's the debate on the issue of whether five votes on the city council can just tell everybody else to go take a flying jump in the lake.
Ramrod democracy.
It's not even democracy. I would say it's more like autocracy.
Yeah, for sure.
A small number of people are making a decision about selling the homeless garden project, even though there's no immediate need for the money, even though 5,600 votes have come in signatures on a petition that have said...
Even though they were filed with the city clerk 3 days before escrow closed, so it's illegal that escrow was allowed to close?
Even though the commissions, both the Planning Commission and the Parks and Rec Commission, have voted 4-1 against this developer's plan, even though we're talking about dumping a community and a homeless garden project that has been successful and it's received numerous awards nationally, and it's going to be replaced by what, 17 luxury million-dollar homes?
I'm not sure if it's 17. I think it's more like 9, isn't it? And a little teeny park.
And a little teeny park. Anyway, if you want to come and voice your view that the people who are doing this could be doing better things with their time and should be. In fact, I would encourage you to come and start organizing a recall effort against the leaders of this situation where we're talking Rotkin, Hernandez, Matthews. Come. It starts at 7, and you'll probably hit the agenda around 7:30 or 8, maybe later. Bring a pillow. Come prepared to weather. Bring a hot dog, something you can... If you're not a meat eater, have an avocado ready. Possibly some old tomatoes would be good, too. That's Tuesday evening, City Council, March 10th. If you can't make that, you can always give a call to City Council and tell them not to dispose of the Homeless Garden Project. Or if they do want to do it, consider resigning as well. Their phone number is 429-3550. That's a 24-hour line. So if you call 429-3550, you can give them a piece of your mind on this issue. I'll then call three friends and ask them to do the same. Again, don't dispose of the Pelton Street property. Do resign. That's my suggestion. And why am I being so harsh about these council members? Well, simply talking about the issue, which I think has always been my previous stance, is just not seem to be doing it. We need to tell these folks to go home.
You know, you're really not alone. You're really not alone much anymore, Robert. You know, as people that know me know, I go to a lot of meetings all over town. I go with liberals and conservatives and church people and all kinds of meetings. And the talk of recall, Kennedy, Rotkin are really on the top of the list. Talk of recall, even at the Keeley Wandangle, you know, kickoff.
Keeley was our supervisor, yeah, and, one of the supervisors.
And, you know, I would say the big demos were there. But there was talk among really established Democrats that were saying, you know, Rotkin's absolutely got to go. This man's gone way too far. I say, well, you know, he's backed himself into a corner. And they say, well, it's too bad. It's just amazing, the talk of recall I hear all over town.
Well, it'd be nice. I don't see any hint of it yet in any of the newspapers, either even the City on a Hill or Fishrop Live. My attention was drawn to the Pelton Street issue most for the first time, really, when I saw it in the Sentinel about a month ago. And Karen Clark actually did an interesting article on it, so I kind of began to follow it. This time, of course, Clark has done an article on the fluoridation debate, which is going to be the second issue that folks may be interested in at the City Council meeting on March 10th at the evening session. But there's been nothing on the Pelton Street property, even though I would say the situation has heated up locally, politically, at SCAN forums and elsewhere. And, of course, we had Chris Jennings at our last show here on Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, talking about the issue with some eloquence at some length. You know, so that's certainly true. What do you think is likely to happen at the meeting, David? And what is a recall movement going to happen here? Is it going to form?
Well, there's certainly a lot of talk about it. And of course, you know, talk is cheap and action is priceless. But I think after Tuesday's meeting, I don't see any giving of these five members of the City Council. I don't even see them even reflecting.
Which five are these?
This would be Michael Hernandez, Cynthia Matthews, Beth McCampbell, and then the two patriarchs of Santa Cruz, Scott Kennedy and Mike Rotkin. And when I say patriarchs, it's really gotten to the point that it's very obvious to everyone that they just simply think they're absolutely better than everybody else and that they know the way. I'm sorry, Mike. I'm sorry, Scott. You know, give it up. You know, they need to give it up. It's way overdue. They need to stand. If they vote for this, they need to